Given that it's now 6 o'clock, we will call this meeting to order. The first item is the approval of the agenda.
Move to approve the agenda.
I'd second that.
Do we have a motion to approve the agenda?
Yes.
We do.
Second?
I would second that motion.
Have a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Next, approval of minutes. Do we have any requested changes or comments on the minutes?
Well, there's one small one. It's on page 4. Mr. Haslag's name is not Haslak, so the correction is his last name is spelled H-A-S-L-A-G.
Okay. Name change noted. Any other changes or recommendations?
I move approval.
Second.
Okay, I'm sorry, raise your hand so I can see. We have a motion by Andrew and a second from
Ken.
All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion
Chairman,
carries.
Just for the record, I abstained from participation because I wasn't present.
Jeremy, you want to introduce yourself?
I'd be happy to. My name is Jeremy Root. I'm an attorney, work at Stinson Leonard Street in Jefferson City, Missouri. Citizen of Columbia, moved here in 2006 and was appointed to this commission at the most recent city council meeting on October 16th. It's approximately 2 weeks ago. And so I've been playing catch up and appreciate the help that I've had from the chairman as well as from the applicant and others in the community in understanding the issues in this TIF application. I look forward to my service. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, we thank you for joining. Just as a comment here, while we did the general votes for ayes and nays on the agenda and on the minutes, as we go into any other motions, we will handle those with roll call. Just for the record. Going into the next section of public hearing, we have the Broadway Phase 2 TIF redevelopment plan and project continuation, as we did not close the previous public hearing. We will begin with the review of the redevelopment plan and project for the benefit of any new members that or members of the audience that might not have been here the first time.
Excuse me for the clanging. My name is Robert Hollis. I'm an attorney with the Van Maitre Law Firm here on behalf of the applicant. I hope you have the hard copy of a presentation that we also have a digital copy of that those viewing will be able to see. Trust me, although it's 30 pages long, I don't intend to spend time on most of what you've already seen, but for the benefit of some new members and members of the public that might be interested, I included that information. Also, Mr. Parmley will be here. He's had some difficulties with his vehicle, but he's on the way. We'll be here hopefully within the next 10 or 15 minutes. And we have Mr. Nassie here as well, who you're familiar with as well. Project information slide showing the location. Again, it's immediately north of the existing tower, which is called the Broadway, owned and operated by Mr. Parmley, or actually one of his entities. Project information, nothing has changed in that regard. Same amenities are planned with respect to the new tower, including additional ballroom space and connections to the existing tower. The slide with a whole lot of little words, and they're all the same. It meets the city TIF guidelines as well as the state TIF criteria. What's slightly different on that slide is we updated the numbers under the public benefits, but you've also received that information before. We had referred to it as $8.3 million before. We can get into the more detail on that shortly, but it's actually $9 million as opposed to $8.3 million. Next slide is the redevelopment plan slash conservation area designation. That's identical to what you've seen before, except for the bold portion pointing out the three components of conservation area, which is that the structure be more than 35 years old, at least 50% of the structure. There's only one structure on this site, so the structure that's not yet blighted but is detrimental to public healthy safety moral or public health, safety, morals, or welfare, and may become blighted. We'll focus on that shortly. Cost-benefit analysis. In addition to that, you will have, if you don't have, a letter from the applicant that states, in essence, the rate of return with TIF slash CID assistance is sufficient to obtain loan approval and therefore makes the project financially feasible. Just wanted to make it 100% clear that it is the applicant's opinion that it is a financially feasible project. Same site photos, there's three or four slides. They are identical to what you've seen previously. Next slide, which is cost benefit, but for why TIF is essential, that is also identical. If you have any questions, be happy to answer any that I can, or Mr. Nassy could as well. So new information, although it's not new, but in more detail, we want to talk about the conservation area as well as the but-for test, and that's based on some of the questions that we've seen from members of the commission as well as other interested parties. So two questions. Is it a conservation area, and does it meet the but-for test? It is our opinion that all of the documentation and information that we have provided contains the information that is sufficient for you to reach the conclusion that it is a conservation area and the but-for test has been met. It is very similar in that regard to the previous TIF, which used to be the Regency, is now the Broadway, exists solely because the TIF was approved a few years ago. Now, what arrived today, which is pertinent to these two issues, is a letter from a Boone County auditor dated as of this date, and in our opinion, confuses some of the issues, but is also, I think, very helpful for going through the analysis of conservation area and but-for test. So the confusion, we believe, comes from a misinterpretation of the statutes, and then some of the enhancements that were written in the letter to the statutory requirements applicable to conservation areas as well as the but-for test. Quotes such as, and if you have the letter in front of you, hopefully you do have the letter, at least have access to the letter. If you don't, I would like to make sure that you do. Okay, thanks. Fourth paragraph where it states that you must find that there is a, quote, serious problem with the property in its current condition and that the problem presents a clear and present threat to public health and safety. That's not statutory language. It does not state that, and it's actually contrary to statutory language for a few reasons. Probably the most important part, serious problem doesn't exist, clear and present threat doesn't exist, but then to public health and safety. What's really misleading about that is it is to public health or safety or morals or welfare. Now, or isn't in there every time, it's in there one time, but the interpretation is or, it is not and it's certainly not just health and safety. It could be health or safety, but it could also be health or safety or morals or welfare. I'm gonna make that absolutely clear. There's also a statement in the letter, a couple of statements about not having information, specifically with respect to determining whether the conservation area exists. So second page, first full paragraph, actually third full paragraph, sorry, second full paragraph. If you go to the redevelopment plan, which you've had in your possession for literally months now, and look at sections 3 and 4, there is an extensive amount of evidence applicable to and supporting the fact that it is a conservation area and that the but-for test has been met. So we can we'll summarize some of that tonight as well, but that's, you know, there's a whole lot of information and that you have that is evidence of the existence of a conservation area. There's also in the third full paragraph of the second page, which deals with the but-for test, the quote of the statutory language is accurate, but then the I guess I'll call it the, in other words, description of the but-for test is just not statutory. There is nothing about, we'll just go to the last sentence. So it says, the but-for test requires the TIF Commission to reach a finding that no development whatsoever would reasonably be expected to occur on this parcel unless TIF financing is approved, comma, ostensibly due to the near blight conditions in existence on the property. That's just not the test. You may agree or disagree with a sentence, but it's simply not the test. So I would encourage you to look at the statute, and I've got the statutory language for you coming up soon. So next slide. Hopefully we'll make that even more clear. It is a conservation area per the statutory requirements, and there are no other requirements other than statutory requirements. So hopefully that's what we are focusing on. The easiest way, I believe, to look at this is to break it down into three components. And that's the first one is that the structure must be more than 35 years old. Now, the statute says 50% of the structures, but again, we have one structure. This structure is more than 35 years old. The second component is the site is detrimental to the public health, safety, morals, or welfare. Again, focusing on or. Another way to say the second component is that it is moving in the direction of causing harm to public health or safety or morals or welfare. Moving in the direction of causing harm. It's a far cry from clear and present threat to public health. The third component is that it may become blighted, and that's because of several factors, and those factors you've been exposed to now for quite some time. So first component, we've got three for conservation area. First component must be more than 35 years old. It is. Check the box. Second component, is it moving in the direction of causing harm to public health or safety or morals or welfare? Okay, so we can just pick one if we want. We can pick safety. So safety's highlighted. It is moving in the direction of causing harm to public safety because of the deleterious land layout. That's, again, statutory language. It's dangerous because to enter onto Walnut, because it is dangerous to enter onto Walnut, going north, because of poor site and elevation conditions. I've got a couple of photos, but if you've been to the site, you know it's a really steep drop-off. If there are cars... really dangerous up here as well. Well, thank you. Sorry about that. So if you've been there on the steep downslope, there's cars parked. It's very difficult to see pulling out either direction, frankly. It's also dangerous to public safety because pedestrians attempting to traverse along the sidewalk on Walnut are in a precarious situation because of the cars that are coming down the steep slope and can't see. It's also dangerous because parking on the site it requires you to park next to a ledge, and that is not safe. So you actually drive next to the ledge, but you park next to the ledge. Due to those elevation differences, it simply is dangerous to the public. So check the box. Here are the pictures. Picture on the far left shows what I'm talking about. That is the point of egress from the site. Second picture shows the same point of egress, but shows a vehicle coming down the hill, and you can see a vehicle parked legally to the right of that vehicle as it's facing. And then you can see the viewpoint from that vehicle in the third picture. And if you look really closely, you can see there is a car, but it's very difficult to see that car. So again, it is dangerous. And is moving in the direction of causing harm to public safety. So with regard to the ledge, there's a red line on the left picture. That is the ledge. Then if you're looking at the second picture, there's a little arrow showing the drop-off. If you were to drive too far, I guess that would be to the west, your tire could fall off the ledge, or if you park too close to the ledge, again, it is dangerous due to the layout. Now, that was safety. Back to component two. So component two has been met. Component one was met 35 years. Component two has been met because of the deleterious layout, moving in the direction of causing harm to safety. But belt and suspenders for the second component, it is also moving in the direction of causing harm to public health and morals because of excessive vacancies. Now, as an aside, it's been vacant since December 2010, except for the short period of time where Mr. Parmalee occupied the space during construction and for training. So it was a short period of time since 2010, but otherwise it has been vacant. Health and morals. So causing harm to public health and morals. It is vacant and unoccupied, and it has become a very popular spot for dog excrement. We didn't bring photos because I can imagine that you can imagine, but it is not pleasant. So health is an issue because of that. It's also a great deal of loitering because it is an unoccupied space. People are there at odd hours playing music loudly. There are used prophylactics found on a regular basis, and empty alcohol containers are found on the site as well. Another reason why component two has been met. With regard to moving in the direction of causing harm to public welfare, again, this is belt and suspenders because we've met it through safety and through health and morals, but it's also met through welfare. Welfare, another way to say welfare is prosperity or well-being. Well, how is it moving in the direction of causing harm to prosperity? It is because it continues to remain obsolete, vacant, and in a state of continuing dilapidation. That is not a prosperous situation. Same for well-being. By continuing to remain unsafe because of layout and lack of community planning, it is moving in the direction of causing harm to public well-being. And I might add that lack of community planning, the site was developed long before Columbia Imagined, which is an existing comprehensive plan, and long before the Metro 2020, which was the previous comprehensive plan. So another reason why component two is met, check the box.
Mr. Hollis, there's a reference there to the property being leased at a depressed price. Can you give us some more information about that lease?
Precisely what sort of information?
Well, you know, if it's leased, it's hard for me to understand how it's vacant if it's in fact leased to someone for use. If the lessee hasn't chosen to use the property, no one else could use the property. And so I'm just trying to understand the nature of the vacancy versus the lease.
Yeah, and what was the time of the exact lease, too, would be nice, like from what to what?
Okay, yeah, we'll talk about that, sure. Thank you for the question.
Sure.
Lease, of course, is just another interest in real property. So all property is owned. It can also be leased. The fact that property is owned by someone does not mean that it is occupied. The same with if someone has a leasehold interest in property, you could have a 99-year lease in property and you didn't occupy it, it would be vacant. So there is no correlation with leased and vacant, right? Because it can be vacant and leased at the same time. They're not the same thing. Mr. Parmalee has, in fact, leased the property since 2010, I believe. 2012. But has not occupied the space except for a short period of time during the construction. Construction was about 18 to 24 months during between 2010 and 2017. So hopefully that answers your question. There is a distinction between leased slash owned and occupied, vacant. They're not the same. There isn't a correlation. Sense?
That it doesn't make sense.
I'll try again. It is, you can, you could lease my house for the next 100 years and not occupy it. I could own it, you could lease it, but that would mean if you weren't there, it would be vacant. If you didn't lease it and I owned it for the next 100 years and I wasn't there, it would still be vacant. So the lease has no, it makes no difference with respect to being occupied or vacant. They're two totally different things.
I will say up to this point, I think that the point that was being made, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that because there was a lease, because he was in it, some might feel, well, the property couldn't have been sold or whatever the case may be, or leased or developed, or was the owner even looking to sell it? And I mean, those are the, and I understand what you mean about there may not be anybody there, but it's still the owner's responsibility to clean up his property. So that doesn't, in my opinion, and I don't know how we evaluate it, but if an owner is not taking care of his property, is it because it's in a bad area, or is it because the owner's not keeping up with his property? And I'm talking about the stuff that's found on the property. I'm not talking about the other stuff that he should be. But we were led to believe that, or I guess I was led down the path in my, the fact that somebody was leasing it or occupying it and in it and using it for those purposes. So
I might add that I've inartfully used the term hostage. The building was held hostage during the entire lease time. Whether the lessor stepped foot in there, the building was off the market to anyone. It was held hostage.
Well, that's not accurate, because anyone could have leased it. It just so happens that the only interested party was Mr. Parmley, and that was at a very depressed rate. I put depressed price because that's a quote from the owner of the property, depressed price. There were no others interested. Otherwise, if there had been, he would have leased to someone else for a larger amount. If there had been people interested in buying it, he could have sold it to someone else, even with the lease in place. So it simply was not held hostage. It was on the market like just as any other property would be. They were short-term leases and still are short-term leases. Yes, sir.
I thought earlier, in an earlier presentation, the statement was made that the owner had an opportunity to lease to several different interested parties but decided not to lease to them because he didn't think they qualified. So, I mean, is that a situation where he's creating his own problem? I mean, I guess if it's vacant, if he hasn't leased it and it's vacant, looks to me like he's created a vacancy by not leasing it.
I think what you may be talking about was pre-2010, where I think there were some, we'll call them businesses that the owner didn't think were reputable and not highly sought after as far as the type of land use for the area. I can't speak to what lease rates they may have negotiated at that time, but for whatever reason, it was not satisfactory to the owner. The owner has, you know, as any owner would be, has no motivation whatsoever to not lease their property or not, you know, get the best and most benefit that they can from the property. And it's, that has been the case for years, yet here we are with a Mr. Parmley being the only interested party in leasing it and then doing so at a depressed price. Those are just the facts. Whether the owner could have done something different or marketed it differently or made improvements to the site, you know, who knows? But the fact is, here's where we are. And it has been vacant, except for that short period of time during construction, which is approximately 18 to 24 months.
Thank you.
So those were components one and two. And let me back up. That component, that was just our third belt and suspenders approach to meeting component two. So if you have an issue with that one, it's already met with the others. So the third component is that it may become blighted. It may become blighted for the reasons that we've already talked about. So rather than go through all of them, instead of it moving in the direction of becoming, it is now may become a thing likely to cause harm. It's another way to say that it may become blighted. That statutory term, menace, definition of menace being thing likely to cause harm. So if you believe those dangerous situations that I pointed out exist and may become a menace to public health, safety, morals, or welfare, then this third component has been met. The same with respect to health and morals. The same with respect to welfare. Another way to look at this component is whether or not it may become something constituting an economic or social liability. And those are really broad terms, but economic liability would certainly exist due to the costs associated with the safety, health, morals, and welfare risks. Also, just by the fact that it is failing to generate revenues for public, it's an economic liability as it stands and as it will be without redevelopment. Social liability, by remaining underutilized, it is therefore vacant, deteriorating, and dilapidated, just like the Regency site was, and hence it may become blighted, our third component. Check that box. Do you have a question, sir?
Well, I listened to the words, and I noticed that you want to draw a significant comparison to the Regency site. But I don't think that passes in a whole bunch of ways, mainly because of the but-for test. But I look back at the issues about, for instance, I look at the parking. Yeah, there is a ledge there. But, of course, Ditter Properties, LLC, owns a property right next door that is down below that, as well as until a contract is consummated. So the business about the parking, somebody falling, all that kind of stuff, is just terribly easily remedied without a $20 million project there. I must admit, this notion about the current owner could have done something, I just don't think that can be ignored. And in fact, all the conditions you're citing would have been very detrimental to the businesses that are in the current building next door, the current Kalani, Timberlake Engineering, and so forth. So I must admit, this just sounds like may, but it really is very, very confusing to kind of say, well, it may or it will be, when in fact the current owner and the prospective owner, because of the lease, could have basically prevented most of these. And the idea that the sidewalk itself is a massive danger, I just don't see it. Just because you can basically make a sentence that says that does not make it really a significant danger, harm, et cetera. I mean, that's where I'm coming from. I mean, there are places where there are real dangerous things. I just don't see this here.
And, of course, you could say that about every piece of property because every property is owned. But so somebody's to blame. But so it doesn't make any this any different from any other property that would be considered. So in summary, it is a conservation area because three components are met. It's more than 35 years old. It is moving in the direction of causing harm to public health, safety, morals, or welfare, and may become blighted. Second question, does it pass the but-for test? The verdict, it passes the but-for test. The test is actually really simple. And it's also, can, well, not also, it can be broken down into two components, and that is the site has not been subject to growth and development. Get to that. Through investment by private enterprise and would not reasonably be anticipated to be developed without the adoption of TIF. Three incontrovertible facts that I would ask you to consider. One, there has been no growth and development for over 50 years. That might not be accurate. I know it's for over 35 years. I think it's close to 50 years, but by saying over 50, it might not be accurate. So I will change that, if you will, to approximately 50 years. But it's a really long time that there has been no growth and development on the site. So of our two components, the first one is met. We'll take all these, all three of these, hopefully, together to reach the second component. The applicant is uniquely situated to develop the site. And that's important because even this applicant, who is uniquely situated adjacent to the site, has the ability to develop it and take advantage of economies of scale and location, cannot develop the site without TIF. So what better evidence that it is not reasonable to anticipate that it would be developed without TIF? It's as good evidence as can be had at this point. And I would add to that, and the final sentence of that slide basically is a repeat, but there are no other proposals. Keep in mind, there was a request for proposal that was submitted. There was one response. There's nobody else lined up to develop the site. Nobody at this point. So, again, it's not reasonable to anticipate that it would be developed this time. That's all I have. If Mr. Parmalee is here, which it looks like he is, I'd be happy to answer questions now.
Well, actually, when you say these three inconvertible sites, and, of course, you are focusing somewhat appropriately on this one-quarter acre lot and nothing else, and I'm not sure that's the total focus. To say there's been no growth and development on that lot in a 50-year period, or maybe it's whatever it is, when, in fact, for most of that time it was occupied and a going concern business was there with maintenance and all this kind of, that's just stretching the idea of a growth and development. I don't think it meets that test. I did not find anywhere in the statute any reference to an applicant being uniquely situated to develop site having any bearing on this at all. I mean, that may go to the issue about whether you're saying, well, would anybody else want to do it? But that's, I don't think that's the test. And then, of course, even the applicant cannot develop the site without a TIF. I mean, that's a statement, but I don't think it's an inconvertible fact at all.
Well, thank you, John. Please continue.
Thank you.
Parmalee?
Thank you all. Sorry, I was for my tardiness. I had a little car issue on the way down. Let me catch up where we're at here. Looks like the next page we have here, I think there was a question asked. Mr. Clark, I believe you might have brought the question up about new market tax credits. To be clear about this, I've never granted or been received any new market tax credits.
Excuse me. Could you speak up just a little bit?
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Of course. To make it clear, I've never received any new market tax credits. I've received a loan from Advantage Capital on the project, and I ostensibly they received credits that they monetized, loaned me the money. I guess it'd be no different than when you get a home mortgage, do you ask the bank where the money came from? It's exactly the same situation here. So I was told they're qualified by geographic zones. It's a program administered by the Secretary of Treasury and around since 2000. Yeah, at this point, they've made no commitment to the second project to me at all. In the previous projects, what basically transpired was I would do all the legwork and due diligence on the project, spend my money, and hoping that they might come in on the project, but not knowing for certain. I would remind you that when I built the Broadway, I started that project in 2010, at the depth of the recession, and I had somebody the other day ask me if the Broadway Hotel had done very well. I said, well, it's not met its expectations for us. And he says, it's done very, very well. I said, no, that's not done very, very well. We've had lots of headaches and hiccups along the way here. And as previously mentioned, I'm in a continuing lawsuit over issues that were not correct in the construction, and the project was delayed to us by 9 months. So you've heard the adage about bankers and umbrellas. So my first thought when he asked the question was, in 2010, I didn't have a crystal ball to know if it's going to be sunny today. And luckily it is. I probably wouldn't be here if the sun hadn't come out. I don't think anybody would have known in 2010. It was a scary time. And yet I moved forward to my risk and advanced this project. It took me 4 years to do it. And asking for the city to continue supporting my vision. I think there was a question asked maybe by Mr. Root, is that correct?
That's right.
Regarding Eagle Bank and Trust. They've been a lender on three of my hotel projects, two in Chesterfield and one in Steamboat Springs. They were merged or bought by Enterprise Bank in St. Louis. I don't know the exact date. It might have been February. And I believe you were referencing the fact that my application might have shown that in April, which would have been an error on my part. So to correct the statement, the Enterprise Bank is the current lender on those three hotels.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
No problem. I believe this was circulated this weekend, Tony, to all the members here. And I must say I regret not working on this sooner and getting us out. I think there's been a lot of talk about the but-for conservation, and it seems like there's been a purposeful lack of wanting to talk about the economic benefits of the project, which I think are undisputably very large. $9 million, and this is just for local tax districts. Obviously, it's more to the state. This is also just immediate benefits. Doesn't take in the ancillary benefits of people coming to town, spending dollars at other places downtown, which is our goal, to encourage more people downtown. So hopefully this makes it very clear what the tax needs to receive, and I think the numbers are significant.
On this table, what evidence do you have or documentation to support that this would all be net new activity as opposed to substitutionary from other hotels in the area?
Yeah, I don't have any data. I would say that a good percentage of it will be. I think it's a growing area here. People want to be downtown. We've seen that. When I was developing the Broadway Hotel, I was also looking at the Tiger at the same time before I bought the Regency. I was kind of going back and forth, and I chose to do the Regency for many reasons, but I said all along, even in the first TIF hearings, I said there's certainly room for both the properties down here. So I think we have a product downtown. We have a very unique downtown. I may have shared with you. If not, I've shared it with some other committee. I've kind of lost track. Talked to many. Ken's been at most of them, I think, or seems like it. So, the mayor a few months ago, a State of the Union address, talked about how we're impacted by sales tax, and we're totally relying on sales tax. And I've made an observation of the downtown CID at, you know, Amazon is hurting us, hurting small businesses, yet we have a very special downtown. And I don't think Amazon's going to be able to deliver the experience of being downtown anytime soon. So I feel like I'm coming forward now with a project that would actually help remedy part of that and bring more people downtown. And that would be my point there.
So just to clarify, there is no evidence to support that this would all be net new additional revenue?
No.
Okay.
I would think that a good portion of it probably would be, because people seem to like this being downtown. I mean, you think about people coming to town on a trip. I'm sure Amy Schneider probably has data on average spend per day for visitors. I would have to think that visitors to downtown are spending slightly more than a highway hotel, because we get a lot of interstate traffic, people just stopping for the night, passing through, and people want to be downtown. So I think meeting space downtown would be a unique venue that's not already there, so that would be totally new to food and beverage revenue portions, for sure.
Mr. Parley, before you go on, I just wanted to ask a question about the way the EATs are intended to flow in this project. And it's my understanding that if this project is approved in Tower 2, then the sales tax component will all be registered and captured in Tower 1. Is that
I would say all the RIFT. I believe it's the food and beverage components thereof. And this, we had a similar situation, and I think there was a ruling on it maybe back when the Tiger Hotel and Glenn's Cafe became merged together. So I think it was determined at that point that the sales rang up at Glenn's Cafe. Was it, since the sales at Glenn's were rang up at the hotel, I believe they determined that the sales went to that TIF. So we have a similar situation here. We only have one cash register. We front desk at the existing tower. So all those sales will flow through. And that's, as you see before, it's before we had $8.3 million, and now we have additional almost $700,000 here that flows back to TIF 1, which will also ostensibly give us a chance to pay that thing off early. Certainly no promises, but I can guarantee it makes it a lot easier when you have additional income coming on TIF 1. So to that extent, if it's successful and does well, it should pay off sooner. But promises how much. That's, I guess, another benefit, so to speak, of having that.
Okay, can I ask a clarifying question? Because I think I asked that about paying off the TIF earlier in one of our board meetings, and I said, are you on track to do that? And you had said no. So did that mean before this project, or?
We're speaking of TIF, the existing TIF, or the
yes.
one?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So right now, no, as a matter of fact, by projections, I believe we're supposed to have $1.2 million in revenues paid back in the TIF. And I think to date, Lynn Cannon verified just a little under 500,000 maybe. So part of that was the delay. Once seeing the contractor delayed my project by close to 10 months.
So you're anticipating that if this TIF is passed and this project goes forward, you could pay off, excuse me, that first TIF sooner?
Theoretically. Once again, it's theoretically. And okay. You know, 15 years no, remaining, I, the remaining I term is 15
I just,
years.
I mean,
a lot
I
of things can happen. Good
well, I understand. And I just think, though, that, you know, we rely on certain information. Mm-hmm. And when that question, when I asked that question during a board meeting, your answer was no, which, I mean, is not.
Well, I guess I thought maybe we were talking about the first.
Right.
Second one, I'm sorry.
Now, my second question is when we talked about sales tax. I was under the impression in some of our prior meetings that everything with this new tower would, in fact, be rung under the first, like including all the weddings and stuff, is
yeah, the food and all the food and beverage components in the tower. So we're proposing like a large ballroom in the
so
second tower.
So what wouldn't be rung up under that? I guess is what I'm trying to get at.
Well, yeah,
the hotel rooms and stuff.
Yeah, the hotel rooms are excluded. There's the
okay.
room tax is sorry, room tax is excluded. Okay. We found out from last time.
Okay.
So,
I mean, I don't
no,
know.
That's
I
good
just
point.
Was
yeah,
asked.
Right.
I just want to make
exactly.
sure that we. Really
yeah.
say what
lodging
what.
Tax is excluded. So, you know, the slide here basically shows everything that's not going to TIF. So this is showing $9 million. So I guess, you know, there's a lot of confusion. And sometimes it's hard to explain TIFs. Some mm-hmm. days I don't like wondering. So probably the best way I've been able to kind of characterize this or simplify the explanation on it is, one, not a single dollar of any existing taxes is being used on this project. What this would represent would be that nobody gives me a satchel full of money when the project's done. I'm doing a wait 23 years. It comes to me as streams, so if I miss my projections, I'm the one that comes out short on it. We're talking about here, if somebody was to say, would you invest $2 million to make $9 million? You know, 23 years, I would think it's a good investment, but what if I was to say, I'll loan you the $2 million so you can invest it and make $9 million? Probably gets better. What if I told you that if for some reason it doesn't work out as planned, I'll just forgive that loan to you? That's exactly what we're talking about here. So the way I look at it, it's heads you win, tails you win. See, that's pretty small print, Robert. Miscellaneous.
Just to clarify, sure. This is not net benefits to taxing districts, having taken into account any potential impact on public services and that sort of thing.
I don't think it was ever called for, but no. For example, schools, in their presentations, we mentioned that, once again, the jobs we're having would be local. So the $208,000 going to schools, they're getting personal property taxes, whereas they're getting zero now.
Identifying that the title of this schedule is benefits to taxing districts, but there is, I don't think, any corresponding schedule of estimated cost to taxing districts for
no,
police,
not.
Fire, infrastructure, sure. that sort of
yeah.
thing.
Well, for the school districts, once again, I was addressing in terms of there's no additional students if it's local employees being hired. It shouldn't be a drain on them. As far as other ones, I have no way of analyzing that. I think this table here, further illustrates what the previous one then, Robert, pretty much. Okay, so I don't think there's anything new here. This ties back to the cost-benefit analysis, references the tables where the data was sourced from. There was a, on the previous worksheet, you might have seen it, the county also collects a handling and processing fee. I'm not sure what the actual term is. I think it's 1 5/8% that they take. So, you know, if the property is $4,500 a year now, and I'm, say, for example, paying $204,500, they would take off 1 5/8 of that and keep from further trouble, I guess, doing that. So that was another $70,000 in the county. So in total, the county's receiving $2.2 million additional. Table here, is this a continuation, Robert, again? City. Oh, each tab is a different entity. Okay. Yeah, so the first one's city, $5.8 million. Second one's county, $2.2 million. Funds that aren't captured. I guess to summarize, we feel like the project met the statutory requirements, as Mr. Hollis discussed. I'd stress once again, there's no risk to the city on this project whatsoever. There's no guarantee of the payments to me. It's a wait-and-see, pay-as-you-go type program. And like I said before, right now I'm coming out $500,000 versus 1.2. And at the end of the TIF, if I haven't received all the funds at that point in time, it's my loss. I forfeit any remainder. And the project goes back on the tax rolls. I guess just thinking back to the last point here, catalytic effects to the to the economy. Once again, looking back to 2010, I wish I had a photograph shooting kind of from college up towards where the Regency is at now back in 2010. At that time, you had Newton Riley had several multifamily and student housing projects in there, and it kind of looked like a wasteland down through there. And you look at it now, it's obviously quite transformed. I think our project was responsible for a lot of that catalytic development. And we set out to be a gateway to downtown, which I think we did, and a gateway to the North Village Arts District, and be a catalytic effect. So I'd like to continue that plan and bring more people downtown in Columbia so they can enjoy the benefits thereof. If any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
I have a question for the...
Sure.
Ms. Parmley, you mentioned your vision about, this project earlier, and one of the worst-kept secrets about this whole thing is that you have a Phase 3 in mind. So would you please describe what you have in mind as the Phase 3 of this project, and also explain why you haven't mentioned that publicly before?
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. Yeah, it's no big secret. I've told several people about it. Several city council people as well. So I have been looking at how to do a possible Phase 3, and my thought process there, a vision for that, would be a true conference center for downtown Columbia. I think it'd be very well used. I think it'd bring a lot of people here. People want to come to Columbia. I think we're missing a lot of events that are going to Springfield, St. Louis, Kansas City. I told one city council meeter recently, I said, backing up, I had somebody else who was encouraging me to talk about Phase 3, and I said to him, I said, I'm not in the habit of dangling carrots for expediency here, so I didn't want to bring it up, but what do they say about no good deed goes unpunished? So as black and white and opposite day here, everything I seem to say seems to be turned around 180 degrees, so it's no secret. I've told people, I've talked to the city about it before too. Such a project would be a huge undertaking to bring on here, and it would require probably every economic tool in the toolbox to happen. So it might take the rest of my lifetime to do it, and city council person said, well, kind of like a legacy type thing. I said, yeah, could be a legacy type project, but I think it would be very successful. I guess I felt at the time we were doing this that it would just further add more layers of questions and how will that happen? I can easily see that taking 4 or 5 years to transpire. And that being said, you know, the sooner we get started, the sooner we get it done. So there was no trying to hide that fact. I think you'd asked me, Mr. Root, when we spoke the other day about it. Actually, the parcel to the Meadley to the west, I put under contract after I applied for the TIF, so I wasn't sure it was available. And I even thought at that point, do I stop, you know, and bring my application back and do a phase 2-3 type project? Once again, the whole thing about how long it would take to do is why I didn't proceed that way. So that property could have been fine just buy and hold as an investment, I guess, because it's rented up. You know, if you look at just treaded water, might have that. So you're familiar with the Amlin site to the north as well. I view that as the new frontier. Go north, young man. So I think there's a lot of opportunities there. I'm on the downtown CID now and have been talking a lot about trying to press that issue. I think the city has a option to buy it. I'm not sure what the actual terms of it are, but I don't think anybody's really championing that, and I'd like to see that happen as well. I can see that being, whether it be a theater or arts program or a civic center, they could all be tied together there. So this is obviously a lot of big thinking here, and like I said, I've had several people encourage me to bring it out. They say, oh, they people get really excited about that. You know, but so anyway, I hope that answers your question.
It does. Thank you. Just to clarify,
sure.
You mentioned conference center. Do you are you talking about a conference center or a convention center? Or,
well,
and what's
yeah,
the difference?
Yeah, convention center. Yeah, I'm talking about 30,000 square feet usable space, 56,000 total. Usually about 70% is usable for rentable. So you'd have a space for a banquet for 1,000 people, and the lower level you could break into several rooms for smaller meetings. So it would be a full-fledged convention center, I'm sorry, to be clear
thank you.
On the term. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anything else?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Parmley, thanks for being here. I think that your properties in Columbia are great. The Hampton over on Stadium Boulevard has been a nice addition, and the replacement of the Regency with Broadway Hotel is, by anyone's measure, a net gain to our community. And so thank you for your investment in our community to date. And with respect to the proposal on the current proposal that's before us, which is the quarter acre parcel to the north of your tower, I see in the application materials a letter from Carrollton Bank, and it's my understanding that the first project was financed through, in part, Carrollton Bank, but also in part Midland States Bank. And I wonder whether you have a similar financing plan in mind for Tower 2, and if so, why don't we see commitments from the other lenders as well?
Midland State specifically, talking about?
Any other lenders?
Well, yeah, I think I told you on the phone kind of the history of this. Back in 2010 when I was trying to advance a project, I probably took it to 15, 20 banks, including several local banks who looked at the project, and for various reasons, probably the fact that it was a very ambitious plan, and the fact we were in a recession, nobody was loaning money, so they rejected the plan. So it was, like I said, but once again, it's easy to tell it's sunny outside today, but banks certainly don't. They're not known for that. That's not their forte, as being optimist. So I've talked to both of the banks, Midland States and Carrollton, about helping with this next project. They do show interest in doing that, as you've seen evidenced by the letter. But Midland States would also, I could provide a letter if we need be from Midland States, if that's necessary.
Well, and they were the majority lender on the first tower,
correct?
Exactly.
Do
you know what the loan limit is for Carrollton Bank?
I'd be guessing if I said so. Maybe $6-7 million. That's why they came in as participation. And to further explain, once again, all the other banks in 2010 during the recession, you know, the loans they had, usually they try to have a certain number of loans in different type of industries, hotels being one of the buckets, so to speak, and their buckets were basically full of bad hotel loans. Were going bankrupt right and left, so they had no capacity. We were fortunate enough to run into the Midland States Bank, who had just opened a branch in St. Louis out of Southern Illinois, and you know, they were so new to the area that they're in the market, they didn't have any hotel loans in their portfolio. So otherwise, we wouldn't be able to get that loan either, probably. So I think that's illustrative of some of the difficulties in financing a project. There's always a bump in the road, and we try to deal with them the best we can.
Thank you.
Thank you. No further questions. Then at this time, we'd like to move to receiving written comments from the taxing jurisdictions. We will just start down the row. Andrew, you want to start? Do you have any? Anything from the...
I did not receive any written comments from the taxing jurisdictions other than the letter from the library board that was submitted to all the members of the commission late last week, I believe. But nothing in addition to the materials that we've already received.
And at this point, we will go to written comments from the public. Do we have any we would like to share?
Mr. Wren, just for the record, would you make a note or have Ms. Cole note for the record the any taxing district written comments that have been received in advance of the meeting? Mr. Rube mentioned the Columbia Library District, so if she could just note which letters she has received for the record.
Heather?
That might be the only one. They'll all be attached with the minutes afterwards, though. I'm not sure offhand which other ones I haven't already. I mean, they've all been forwarded on already, but.
They have. I think the only, correct me if I'm wrong, Heather, I think the only formal letters expressing their decision on this particular project have been from the downtown CID.
That was included in the first public
hearing.
And
for this one, as was mentioned, the letter that we received from the Columbia Library District here recently. So those are the only two, that I'm aware of.
And Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure whether we received it in terms of in writing, but I'm aware that the Board of Education also took a vote regarding the proposal. Is that
we didn't email anybody.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can I ask the assessor's statement questions about that? Is that not sure how that comes into it all that I just got a little bit ago?
That later today myself as well. Let me see if I can find that.
The county commission has not taken a vote or sent a letter.
From the assessors, the email that was forwarded on?
Yes, this was from Mr. Tom Schalwicker.
When's a good time to bring up questions on that?
I would be happy to read that.
No, I'm more interested in questions on it.
Okay. Basically what he is saying is that the assessed valuation in the Central Business District has increased by 60.52% since 2008. Meanwhile, the assessed value in the city of Columbia has increased by 22.71% since 2008. Development has occurred in unprecedented pace in downtown Columbia for the past 9 years. As it goes on into more.
Well, I guess my point there was, I don't know where this comes in as far as the email sent to the commission and why or for what purpose, but I did have a question on the next paragraph and where that came up as far as the figure of $4.3 million that the schools, roads, library, public safety would lose. I'm not sure why it was sent to us, and then second of all, I'm not sure what substantiates that being sent to us and what substantiates those figures.
Okay, let me ask a quick question. Is Mr. Schalwicker here?
President of the 4th Ward and serve you as Boone County Assessor. Past TIF Commission member, actually, back in the day. Your question. Go ahead, Mike.
My question basically is, where did you get the figures, 4.3? I didn't understand where you got those figures.
This, the email that that.
Then the different taxes from the spreadsheet that the city provided Saturday. Shows one set of figures as far as $7.9 million that the city would enjoy, and then 4.3 is just a kind of a new figure being tossed out there, and it's kind of a broad statement to it that it's from my understanding of all this is the schools aren't losing really anything unless something else would come in that could pay that real estate with that property. So they would lose that 23 real estate for the next 23. So I'm confused on the figure, I guess, is what I'm saying.
The analysis was conducted by our auditor, June Pitchford, and the $4.3 million would, it's like when you, on a $2 million mortgage, the total cost of amortizing that over 23 years would be $4.3 million. Conversely, the taxing entities would receive a shade under, and I apologize here, $695,000. But that was an analysis prepared by June Pitchford, and perhaps she could answer that as well or better than I.
Actually, that figure, Mike, is agrees to a figure in the applicant's cost-benefit analysis on Table 7. If a sum wasn't provided on that table, but the increment is identified for 23 years. In my analysis, I just summed it up over the 23 years, but that amount agrees to the total shown on Table 7 of the cost-benefit analysis.
June?
So I've got a question, Tom. So were you involved with the Sasaki report 10 or 12 years ago? You remember much about that?
I believe I recall testifying before the city council prior to adoption. And in that report, I think TIF was an essential component, if I recall correctly, Andrew.
Yeah, I think that's right. And one thing that's so interesting to me, looking back at that, I hadn't looked at it for a long time. And in preparing for this meeting, I pulled it up and looked at it. And they talk about projects that are catalysts. And so, you know, the numbers that you provided that showed this remarkable increase in value in downtown, and that I believe downtown supports a strong downtown makes for a stronger Columbia. And so I look at the public schools and I see what's happened to their assessment base, and we don't know where that came from, but we know it all starts somewhere. But the Sasaki report in particular used the word catalyst multiple times. And it, interestingly, it said if we could have a hotel or maybe set a hotel conference center, that would serve as a great catalyst. And so the question that I have for you, and I believe that's true, you know, it's hard to know how much the Broadway Tower 1 has improved that part of downtown. You know, as Dave mentioned, it was pretty rough before, and now it's pretty nice. So obviously you're more familiar with the values than anybody else in town. I'm assuming that you would agree that there's been a positive influence on that part of Broadway as a result of the Tower 1. But can you have any estimate of what the value is, what the sort of the halo effect to the different directions has been from a project like that, or even the Broadway if it's, you know, it's different? So.
You know, Andrew, I believe the engine that drives our economy is the University of Missouri, and I think the closer you get to that, that's the goose that lays the golden egg. I think the unprecedented, the 10,000 roughly increase in student enrollment over the last 10 years is really what's driven the development in and around and near the campus, whether you look at Greektown, whether you look at East Campus, or whether you look at downtown or even North Central. I believe that was the catalyst that really ignited downtown Columbia, to answer your question.
Okay. But specifically, if you're trying to see if there has been a positive, maybe negative, but almost certainly positive impact on the nearby businesses, you would know about the increase in their assessed values, or any sense you have of increase in sales tax and things like that. Is that, I'm not sure I'm asking that clearly, but are you following me?
The assessor has nothing to do with sales tax. So, you know, the reports filed annually you know, by the the TIF, the City of Columbia is required to file an annual report on sales tax. But you know, sales tax is you know, in Columbia Boone County is pretty flat. But Andrew, I don't know that you can say that any one project was a catalyst downtown. I'm so old. I remember that this was where we shopped, and then we had Parkade Plaza and the Biscayne Mall and the Columbia Mall, and so the retail has moved, you know, out to Stadium Boulevard, Grindstone, you know, and out on the east side.
Right.
But we began to see, you know, Buck Raiders, you know, renting lofts above, you know, converting that second and third floor into student housing. But again, I don't know that you can, that I have any empirical evidence as to what drove the extraordinary growth downtown. But what this letter really was about, and I was going to wait for public comment, and I did send this to the school board, and there was a bit of miscommunication between June and I apologize. But I thought that you had received this shortly about the 18th or 19th of October. But what was interesting to me in the but-for test was that Gilmore Bell clarified that and said, would redevelopment occur on that site without TIF? And I believe, given the the explosive growth downtown, that the answer is absolutely yes. The last paragraph, or the third paragraph, you know, is concerned, the people I serve, I worry about the people who pay the taxes. That's who I work for. And a TIF shifts the tax burden, because that state law allows the schools to include that in their bonding capacity. And the rest of us will pay for that bonding capacity for 23 years, and the developer won't. So there is genuinely a shift in the tax burden on any TIF. And that was the essence of this letter, Mike and Andrew. Any other questions? I'd be glad to answer. Thank you.
I have a very slight comment. I, too, looked at the Sasaki report, and I was here at the time it was done. And they did talk about hotel and conference and what a boon it would be. And the word catalyst was trigger for everybody, because it was good. But they were talking about it on Elm Street. They were talking about south of Broadway, closer to the university, which goes along in line with what Tom was saying, that that's where that development ideally would happen to have the best effect. Not that this wouldn't be a good effect if it happened north of Broadway, but the Sasaki report spoke about the development Elm Street south of Broadway, close to the university, for the exact thing that Todd just stated.
Also, like to say, in experience with the CVB over the last 10 years, public knowledge, we've used this time and time again as hoteliers. For every $1 spent in a hotel, $3 are spent in town. And that's much, and that's even what our own local CVB will state as far as what we bring. And then the university is a large part of our business, without a doubt. But I would also state there's other large parts of those businesses that come in that are conventions, association. A great one is Misha, 29 weekends this year alone in what it does. So I think that's important things to consider, too.
Michael, I think the essential question is it new net revenue? I had the privilege of refereeing high school and college football and basketball for 20 years, and the tournaments bounce between Springfield and Columbia, whoever can cut the best deal. But is this net new money? That's a real question. Or are we taking it away from other convention visitors' facilities? Thank
Tom,
you.
Thank you. Wrap up the written comments from the taxing jurisdictions. Any written comments from the public? I did receive one written email today from Mr. Randy Gray, who asked the question of Mr. Parmley, if you would like to answer. How many TIF proposals has your firm worked on in Missouri? And of that number, how many or what percentage has your firm deemed met the TIF criteria? Could you? Yes.
Message or email was directed towards development and dynamics. Just to give you a little idea, our firm has been around approximately 20 years. We've worked on dozens of, when you say work on, there's different aspects that you work on, but we have participated in dozens of TIF projects. As far as has every project that's come to us, we probably had more that didn't proceed beyond the initial stage as you do part of the evaluation, because the first thing is there a potential to qualify? Does it satisfy the requirements, whether it's under the conservation area or under the blight area? If it doesn't satisfy that, it doesn't move forward any further than that. So I'm not sure how to answer the second aspect of the question, which is we have had a large number of projects who have pursued it initially, but when you have the discussions about, except for the fact that it doesn't qualify, those projects end up dying and not proceeding forward.
Good. I appreciate you answering Mr. Gray's question. Any other written questions from the...
Didn't this come in today?
Chip Cooper sent another email, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And it was an expanded version of what he submitted before.
It was the most expanded version of what he submitted before, and I would ask that this be entered into the record. Any other?
In case you need a motion, I'd so move. I don't know the procedure on.
Well, we're going to move on to the oral comments from the taxing jurisdictions. Any oral comments? No?
Well, actually, I had one or two. There was a request that I had sent, and maybe it was too late and didn't get any time in there, about information about the contracts with either Mr. Ditter or the Ditter Properties LLC. And so I'm hoping we'll get to hear something about that. And then secondly, there was a lot of talk about 2010, 2011, what was going. Nobody's offered or planned to do anything about this 1/4 acre or other places downtown, because it's been, as Mr. Schallmacher demonstrated, an enormous amount of development downtown in the last 10 years. But in particular, there are two or three things that have happened that really go to the issue about whether this property might be likely developed otherwise. Just this year, we developed, and specifically developed, and the city approved, a form-based zoning guide for downtown. That is actually a 25-year long-range development plan for downtown. So when you're looking at the past and saying nobody's come and said anything about this property, we've had that big change just within the last 6 months. So that notion about nobody coming about this particular property and saying that's evidence that nobody ever will, with this big change in our planning environment. It's also the case that somebody was worried about doing something downtown because of the sewer. We've rearranged a lot of sewer money, basically to build the Flat Branch Relief Sewer System and a related stormwater. And we've done some things specifically to basically deal with, do we have enough power downtown in terms of redistribution from our power plants? All of these things are really quite new. And so even if there had not been investment on this property or other places in downtown in the past, these three new factors just, for me, they basically blow out the water about, you can be absolutely certain that nobody's going to want to develop, or there won't be any development either in downtown as a whole or on this particular property.
Thank you, John. Any other comments from the taxing entities? Not, then we will now proceed with oral comments from the public. If you would like to speak, please raise your hand. I'll pull you up one at a time, and please come to the microphone, introduce yourself and your address. Good evening.
Good evening again. Joe Haslig, 5304 West Tayside Circle, Columbia, Missouri. I've had a little bit more time, so forgive me. I don't mean to glaze anybody's eyes over, but I've just had a little bit more time to do some arithmetic. So let me give you a scenario. Let's suppose that the TIF is provided to Mr. Parmley. The average growth rate in Columbia, Missouri over the last 15 years has been 1.8%. Now, what that means is that about 17 cents of every dollar of additional capital that's put in Columbia is going to go into a flow of goods and services that are produced in Columbia. So if this is a $20 million project, we can do a simple arithmetic and say that that's going to generate about $3.5 million a year over the next 20 to 25 years, for example. And then let that flow increase at the average growth rate at 1.8%. So it's $3.5 million the first year, multiply that by 1.8% the second year, and let the compounding go. Now, if that's the case, then the question is what's the revenue that's going to be generated off of that flow of goods and services that are produced? Historically, the average amount of revenue of goods and services that are produced in Columbia generate 1 cent for every dollar of additional goods and services produced. So let's do one more step of arithmetic. That $3.5 million of extra goods and services produced in Columbia is going to generate about $35,000 worth of extra revenue for the city. So if this TIF proposal is to go through, it's roughly $2 million. We'll just keep the math simple. But the discounted sum of extra revenues that are going to come to the city only amount to $650,000. So as a first layer, I'm simply asking you to say, is it justified? You're going to something. Now, these are averages. These are historical averages. So maybe this is a wildly successful project, and the rate of return, instead of being 17 cents on the dollar, is 50 cents on the dollar. Great. We'd all love that. We all like to see that kind of economic development. We're all looking for big rates of return. If that's the case, I submit to you respectfully, it doesn't justify a TIF if we could look forward and say that it's going to generate 50 cents on the dollar. It could, but averages are both, sometimes it's above average, sometimes it's below. The second thing is, this could be a wildly successful project in terms of generating more cents per dollar of revenue for the extra goods and services that it's going to produce. But I submit to you, it'd have to be three times bigger than the average amount of revenue, city revenue per dollar of goods and services that are produced. Again, if it's that big, something else is going on behind the scenes. If it's that big, if dynamic development or somebody else can make a compelling argument that it's going to be that big, that it's going to be substantially higher than average, then you guys should be not only providing TIFs to this hotel, but every hotel that's going to be generating this kind of revenue. You're responsible for the public monies, and I simply submit to you that it doesn't make any economic sense for this, for you to submit public monies for this project. Thanks for your time. If you've got any questions, I'm happy to talk about the underlying assumptions or anything like that.
Mr. Haslig, I do have a question.
Yes.
Based on your math, would it ever make sense to do a TIF?
There are situations in which possibly it could, but it's really hard to make sense out of it, yeah. Yeah.
Thank you, sir. Yes, please come on up.
Hi, my name's Jan Eddy. I live at 810 Ames Drive. As a relative newcomer to this town, I've noticed the improvement in the downtown over the last 4 years, but I've also noticed that if you're going to add more structures and maybe the tertiary, the third component to this complex, which would be like 1,000 visitors a day, where's your traffic going to go? And who's going to pay for the increased costs for the traffic structures? Simple question. That's basically, I see... if you're going to take tax money and pay for development in this area, there are many parts of the town that have no sidewalks, streets, narrow, crumbling. I think there's better places to put our tax money than developers that want to make more money off of our town. And if you're looking at the university as a catalyst for this, keep in mind that the historic population of students, as I understand it, for the University of Missouri is like about 25,000 students. And with the demographics, we can't conclude that it's always going to be 30, 35,000 students. So that's my opinion. Questions?
Yeah, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Sir, could you repeat your name, please?
Jan Eddy. That's with a Y.
Did you spell the last name for me?
E-D-D-Y. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Yeah, back there. Come on.
My name is Hannah Klatchko. I live at 407 Westwood. The beautiful downtown Broadway Hotel is certainly a great attraction and an addition to downtown Columbia. The addition of the tower would surely be an enhancement. I'm taking the Warren Buffett approach to this TIF proposal. I'm concerned about the money that has already been spent and to be spent for the accommodation of the many high-rise buildings within the last years. With the declining university enrollment, it's apparent that overbuilding has occurred with the consequence of future under-occupancy. If things do not improve, then in 10 to 15 years, we may be facing maintenance needs without which depreciation of those properties will occur with subsequent reduced property tax collections. The same maintenance needs will be for the second tower, never mind the 23 years. Therefore, the City of Columbia should not afford to give the subsidy for the building of the second tower. So says Warren Buffett.
Thank you very much, ma'am.
My name is Alice Turner. I live at 1204 Fieldcrest. So like many other Columbians, I've been following this TIF discussion. I think it's been really useful because we're reassessing our downtown after several years of recent development. And as we heard from our assessor in the paper and tonight, we're finding that downtown is worth a lot more than a few years ago when this individual maybe bravely decided to redo the falling apart Regency Hotel, which we all applaud him for. But today is not then. When I walked in the room, I happened to work in the public health field, and I saw this interesting discussion of one of the reasons we should grant this TIF because of its harm to public health and safety. And I don't know if I'm not quite sure if he said this was our description of that area, but dog excrement, loitering, loud music, used prophylactics, alcohol containers. And I immediately thought, how many of us have been in New Orleans the next morning after? They just wash down the streets and get rid of any such debris. Luckily, Columbia isn't at that point. But the point is, that property is worth a lot of money. It's not blighted, which is every definition I looked up for needing a TIF was a blighted area. I don't think we're blighted at this point. Thank you.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Do we have any other people or anybody else that would like to speak at this time? Yes, please.
Good evening. My name is Steve Spellman. I live at 2312 Katy Lane here in Columbia these
Sorry,
days.
What was your name again?
Steve Spellman, S-P-E-L-L-M-A-N. Try to get close enough, but far enough away from this thing.
Thank you.
You know, I lived in this community, grew up here, lived here my whole life, worked downtown, been a professional in the financial industry for a number of years. But here's a private citizen and just kind of pragmatic observer. I'm not an entrepreneur, though. I'm not a real estate developer, let alone a hotel proprietor. You know, certainly trust the numbers being presented by the applicant here about potential profitability or lack thereof or opportunity and that he might see as an entrepreneur. Certainly appreciate the vision for downtown and possibilities that we could see in the future. But, you know, we have, you know, in this community a tax and regulatory regime. We have a planning and zoning process. And any entrepreneur that wants to come here and submit to the rules that we have established for our community, you know, God bless them. If they see opportunities for job creation and so forth, you know, not to get ideological, but, you know, I'm open to that sort of thing, I guess, as a citizen. But, you know, asking for a tax discount, essentially, that kind of crosses over into where that is part of the public consideration. And so being sold as a public body here on the numbers and economic forecasts and so forth, it becomes something that, you know, you guys get to dig into, which I appreciate your efforts in that regard. But just from a personal historical perspective, I remember as a youth downtown, in the 80s or 90s, downtown wasn't exactly the place to be, right? Some closed places, not really happening. As a national trend, things had gone development out to the suburbs, to the mall, and that sort of thing. We've seen a resurgence, though, in recent decades of that. Infill and, you know, the urban core and downtown areas, our community and other communities like it included, we've seen a resurgence. The county assessor kind of attested to that here in recent times. But, you know, the 2008-2009 financial crisis affected everybody to some degree. We saw public coffers be reduced, particularly those depending on sales tax. But, you know, at that time, we had this opportunity. TIF was kind of a new thing to our community, as I recall. And there were two specific projects that came before the TIF Commission at that time, both downtown properties, both hotels, and hotels that had been in disuse or disrepair otherwise. The Tiger Hotel, I mean, you guys know these examples, but just observations, the Tiger Hotel, historic property. People are concerned, is it going to meet the wrecking ball one of these days? Had been a hotel, had been senior living apartments for a time, a demonstrated non-economical property, and especially in those economic times. The Regency property there, which the applicant has certainly transformed and appreciate that, that really service to the community one way or the other, and the beautiful property, and the top-level roof is great. I've been to a few parties there, and it's really great to see the community from that viewpoint, I would say. But, you know, that Regency, if not blighted, it was in disrepair. It certainly lost its sheen, to say the least, maybe not a crack house or something in, you know, big city sort of thing. But what's there now is better. And so just being pragmatic and non-ideological, you know, those two projects were pretty specific. And they turned around something that would kind of almost proven to be non-economical, you know, regardless of the, you know, projections that we saw about Tower 2 that are coming here. So fast forward to today, and it had been commented upon by some other fellow citizens here, of what's occurred in recent years. And it's no, you know, secret that downtown has boomed. And in fact, the concern about lack of development has switched to some can't beat developers off with a stick quick enough. We've seen a stress on infrastructure. In fact, we had a new mayor come in just last year, I think it was, and institute a six-month downtown building permit moratorium because this was happening so hard and so fast. And I'm not here to argue in favor or against that policy, but the thing is, downtown development is booming. Property values are booming. And, you know, working downtown in the nearly last 20 years is real nice, I must say. And I like to walk around and kind of see what's going on. And as this TIF project has been in the news, I've tend to wandered over toward this property in question and kind of looked around. And I do see the pictures indicate surface parking lot, maybe an underutilized single-story building. It's got a sign on there that, you know, don't come here. It's not a retail place. And it's like there's storage in there or something. And I kind of looked around. And there, if you're familiar with the property and been there, you actually have to look up and around. Because within a stone's throw, There's, well, Broadway Tower 1. There's the accompanying Short Street parking garage the city built in conjunction with that project. The Brookside Complex, which goes a couple, three city blocks and goes across the street on Walnut there. To the north there, there's another tower by that kind of obscures the Orr Street Studios and so forth. Looking up over some other buildings that are existing, there's cranes working. There's new buildings that have popped up. To say that downtown is depressed or in the threat of being blighted is a real stretch, I would say, in that regard. You know, to say that this particular parcel is some kind of armpit, that it's a magnet for dog poop and, you know, used family planning devices and things like this, I do see that as kind of unfortunate that that has to be proven and talked about here and so forth. But I also find it interesting that the taxing districts in previous TIFs and other tax abatement type of projects had been kind of on board as seeing, the but-for test kind of passing. And I was interested to see in the paper the other week that the school board was recommending their representatives vote no here with some concerns. And saw that in the paper and won't quote the commissioners here this evening, but since he's not here, he gets called on. Your colleague, Jonathan Sessions, was quoted as saying, quote, "We're being asked to roll some dice and see if it pays off in 23 years. So kind of a gambling analogy. And really, taxing entities and really essentially taxpayers, one way or the other, as the county assessor was talking about, really, to give an analogy, we're asking to be play roulette and put $2 million on 23 red. And I don't think that's the position that our community should be put in. So one last thing, and I'll yield to some other folks here that want to speak. Broadway 2, this tower that's being proposed, if you approve yes, if the city council approves yes, it goes through, it's built. It will demand greater public services than what's there now. With hopefully it has good occupancy and the guests in these rooms and conference goers and so forth. You know, there'll be medical situations. There'll be, you know, some altercations, unfortunately, where police and fire are called out. And this entity, this property, won't essentially be paying its fair share. And there's a sense of equity as a citizen that kind of concerns me in this regard. And it was mentioned about, if this gets passed with, I think, in my opinion, kind of too optimistic of reading of the statute, particularly with the what for is some of the examples I put here. Why not a Broadway 3? Why not say that the Kalani D Sport building is, it's not very good. There was a drunk guy out there last night, morals or public health or what have you and so forth. And I just try to imagine what level of, creative sophistry it'll take to sell this body in our city council that the but-for and other criteria is just necessary, that no other entrepreneur can possibly imagine some profitable use for this property. Is quite a stretch and concerns me as a citizen. I do want to thank you for your service on this commission. Thanks for your time and attention.
Okay, thank you very much, sir. Any other from the public, sir?
Eric Williams, 1001 Madison Street. I'd have to vote, would like to have a vote no against this. 1001 Madison Street, Eric Williams.
Name?
Eric Williams.
Thank you. I'd like to vote no against this project. For a property owner to say I can let my property purposely get into disrepair to meet this and get free money from the government for a downtown structure is beyond conceivable. I'm pretty sure it could easily be cleaned up and not become a blighted property very quickly. For the money that would be lost from the school districts and putting the schools at a disadvantage from teaching more students and providing more services, the city losing more tax money for police officers and firefighters from taxing from a building, you say, well, no one's going to build a building there. Well, you heard from taxing authority that downtown's grown 60%. If they throw a for sale sign up on the property, I'm pretty sure it would sell to a developer that would want to develop the property and would have the tax base. Like I go 7063 interchange right now, eight-story hotel going up right now. I'm pretty sure they didn't receive any money from this taxing body to build that hotel. And I think the market is great enough in Columbia where we do not need to be giving out corporate welfare to multimillionaires. I'm pretty sure David Parmley is a smart individual who could secure funding from other investors. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Any other comments from the public?
My name is John Rentschler. I live at 4201 Cape Cod Court, Columbia. Good evening, members of the commission. I don't normally come out for these events, so admittedly I'm a little nervous. But as I've read about the application in the local newspaper, talked amongst a number of friends, and listened to our city manager speak at a Rotary Club recently, I was spurred to come out and speak to you at our Rotary Club, and it followed me a little bit of a long way around the barn here, but you've probably heard the city manager say how our tax base in Columbia is being deteriorated through internet sales. Is that, I don't know if anybody's heard that. And he's saying it's terribly unfair to the local retailers, which it is somewhat, but change occurs. But I think his bigger point is the city loses revenue, and the city needs that revenue to provide the services that we all demand and expect as citizens. So if you follow that logic, which I think is fairly reasonable, I'm wondering why we're willing to take another step towards further deteriorating the tax base. Because as the previous speaker said, we're going to build the property. There will be demands for city services, yet we're not collecting the revenue to help provide those. Why do the rest of the citizens need to be responsible for picking up that tab? So that's one point. I find it hard to believe that we can sit here and talk with a straight face about property in downtown Columbia being blighted. If you look straight up 8th Street, there is a six-story building going up that not too long ago was a patio for a local restaurant that at one time was a popular happy hour place. I assure you that 24 months ago, none of us here would have had the vision for a six-story office building on that space. So free market capitalism has a funny way of finding solutions. And that's what I would ask you guys to do, is let free market capitalism run its course and see what comes up. And if Mr. Parmley can put together the project without the TIF, I would be all for it. I would hope that the city would do all they could to help him. But if he's saying, I can't put this project together, the project doesn't have the margins, it doesn't have the profitability, I don't think it's our business to help him along. So
John, I've got a kind of a follow-up question, if I may.
Yes, sir.
So the people who don't know John, he's one of the sort of top financiers in town, so he's used to dealing in numbers and big numbers. And
That's a little hubris, but...
Well, you're very financially sophisticated, and these TIFs, I understand, are difficult to understand. But if you were going to, if you were looking to invest $20 million of your money, and you were going to be, there wasn't anybody except you providing that money, and you had the opportunity to get a couple of million dollars of it back through essentially a tax subsidy, what would you want your rate of return to be? What would your required return expectation be? I mean, would you be a I want 10% or I want 12% to take that $20 million kind of risk, or what?
Yourself. First of all, Andrew, I am not at all a
real estate. Okay, I would just like to intercede here. Andrew, I appreciate where you're coming from, but I don't know that this is the time to question
You're going to let him off the hook that easy,
Mr. Chairman? This is the opportunity
for
public comments.
Okay, here's what I have my quick response is. I am not an expert on real estate investing, not at all. I would say look at the historical return on a 60% S&P, 40% Moody's bond fund, and there's your answer. That's what I would say is your hurdle rate, if you will, of a portfolio return, and your background in trust work and so forth, portfolio management. I know you understand that. Whether that's a reasonable return for real estate, I have no idea.
Well, asking it, and we'll wrap it up here. Okay. But the reason is what you're saying is that if the only way for it to work is with a TIF, forget it. Just don't build it.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
All right.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you for your work.
Thank you. my personal observations here on the public comments, you know, it's not a questioning the public. They're here to make their comments.
Good point.
In the case of Mr. Schallwicker, he was speaking as a public official and expert, so that was certainly appropriate there. But I would just ask that any other public comments be allowed to do so freely. Do we have any other comments from the public? Yes, please come up.
I'm William Maxwell. I'm 706 Fairview Avenue, and I'll try to be more succinct than the last couple speakers. I agree pretty strongly with everything they said. I just think from a political, philosophical standpoint, I don't believe that we should be making any tax deals, bargains with developers for private business. If the project, they need to fund their own projects, and any time that we give them a tax deal, that's increasing the unfairness. That's a double negative, excuse me. Well, it's unfair to every other entity in the county, in the city, that pays taxes, because we're immediately taking a larger share of the entire pie. And the city's revenue is growing a lot slower than our population is, and a lot slower than our commercial development is proceeding. We can't afford to keep giving good deals, tax deals, to developers. They need to pay for their own projects. And I think just on a broader level, philosophically, all of these tax deals, none of them should be done anymore. I consider it, as a taxpayer and a property owner, homeowner, it's extortion, and it's a race to the bottom. If the next community can give them a better deal on their taxes, then they'll go there. But over the long term, it's a slow chipping away, and the foundation of the revenue, we've got to have revenue to have municipal and county governments and school districts to serve the public. And I don't think we should be doing any of these, what I consider extortion, deals to cut people's taxes. That's all I've got to say. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have any further public comments? Okay, I'd just like to take a second to thank everybody that showed up tonight and at the previous meeting. I didn't request any time limits on the public comments because this is a very important issue, and I wanted to certainly let the public speak freely, and whether you were for or against, your input is very important and greatly appreciated. At this point, we will move on to continue or adjournment of the public hearing. And in the interest of efficiency, do we have a motion to adjourn the public hearing?
So moved.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
We have a second. At this point, I will ask Heather to do a roll call on whether or not you agree we should close the public hearing.
Mr. Beverly?
Yes.
Mr. Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Kelly?
Yes.
Ms. King?
Yes.
Ms. Arapalo?
Yes.
Mr. Pearson?
Yes.
Ms. Pitchford?
Yes.
Mr. Root?
Yes.
Ms. Wade?
Yes.
Mr. Waters?
Yes.
Mr. Wren?
Yes. Motion is unanimous, and it carries. So at this point, we will close the public hearing. Before we move into old business, is there any need for a break, a 5 or 10 minute break at this point? Okay. Let's adjourn for, say, 5 minutes, and we will meet back at 10 minutes till.
4 minutes.
return to our seats? We will too. Can you hear? Everybody present?
No.
Oh, we have two members.
Let me see if I can scare them up for you, Mr. Chairman.
Got way laid out in front.
Yeah, I go an hour.
Oh, there she is.
Drinking water. I got to break. Well, that makes sense to me, eh?
You're from Westwood.
I need to get my swig. I think we were all going to start going June, 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 June. Okay, so we have agreed to adjourn the public hearing. There is no old business at this point. The new business is consideration of findings and recommendations. And we will be able to discuss that once we decide which direction we wish to proceed. We have two options tonight. We can continue a vote at another date and time, or we can proceed with a vote tonight. So at this point, I would ask, do we have a motion to vote tonight?
Yes, so moved.
Second.
Do we have a second? We have a second. We will do a roll call vote on this. Heather?
Mr. Beverly?
I want to make sure I know what we're voting on.
We are voting aye if you would like, if you agree that we should make our recommendations tonight.
Okay. Yes. Aye.
Mr. Clark?
Yes. Yes. Aye.
Mr. Kelly?
Yes.
King?
Yes.
Ms. Arapalo?
Yes.
Mr. Pearson?
Yes.
Ms. Pitchford?
Yes.
Mr. Root?
Yes.
Ms. Wade?
Yes.
Mr. Waters?
Yes.
Mr. Wren?
Yes. So we have a unanimous agreement that we will proceed with the vote tonight. There are a number of ways that we can go with this vote. One way would be to vote on each particular item separately, the but-for separately, and the conservation separately, and a recommendation to the city council separately, or the city has provided a motion on the TIF as a whole that we can vote either aye or nay, yes or no, in one vote. So I will entertain a motion at this point.
Excuse me, just Mr. Wren, just to be clear, those aren't really either or propositions. We need you to vote on the resolution either up or down. And then if you want to have the additional votes on the findings that ultimately will be made by the council, that's at your prerogative.
So then we will entertain a motion on this resolution.
I'm sorry to interrupt.
I move to approve the resolution of the tax increment financing committee as presented.
Do we have a second?
I second it.
You have a second. So at this point, if you are in agreement with the TIF resolution, vote aye. If you are in opposition, vote no. Heather, would you please do the roll call?
Mr. Beverly?
Yes.
Mr. Clark?
No.
Mr. Kelly?
Yeah. I'm sorry, what was that?
Yes.
Ms. King?
No. Helen and I have one vote, right? For school board, or do we each do a vote?
You each get a vote.
No.
What?
I mean, it should be the school.
Well, we're here as appointees of the school board. Does the school
board get two votes?
School board
vote?
Has two votes.
School board has two votes.
Okay. No.
Ms. Arapalo?
No.
Mr. Pearson?
No.
Ms. Pitchford?
No.
Mr. Root?
No.
Ms. Wade?
No.
Mr. Waters?
Yes.
Mr. Wren?
No. At this point, the resolution fails on a vote of 8-3 against. We have some time for general comments or by the public, members, or staff. Do we have any additional comments?
Just for our information, what happens from here? I know it still goes forward to City Council, but maybe can talk about some timelines so that
in the basic sense is that the city will review our recommendation and they can either accept it or not accept it. If they or the developer makes any significant changes to the proposal, then it has to go back through the TIF cycle.
When will City Council review this recommendation?
Tony?
This will require two readings of City Council, so my best guesstimate is it'll get to Council probably by the second meeting in November, and they will probably vote on it the first meeting in December.
John?
They have to have two reads. Do they have a public hearing as well?
They will have the opportunity for public to comment on it also.
I guess what I would say at this point is, just from my perspective, having served on, I think this is my sixth TIF commission, I think this has been the most thorough, the most discussed, the most due diligence provided on a particular TIF that I have ever seen, and not that the other ones weren't in up there, but I think this one went above and beyond. And I know there was a couple of long meetings. We got to discuss all the issues, but I think when you are taking a look at changing the integrity of the tax base that the public has put forth, that I think it's very important that we take the time to do that. And so I personally want to thank each of you for your time, your energy, and certainly want to thank the public has come in. Mr. Parmley, your work team, thank you for coming up in the hot seat many times over. It is greatly appreciated. And do we have any? Yes, Mr. Clark.
I must admit, in my mind, and I saw tonight something about what is in the public record and what isn't the public record. What will go to the council and what won't go to the council. I see this because things have not appeared in the minutes that I would have anticipated. So actually, I like to basically make a motion to request the record of all the materials generated by us and submitted to us go to the City Council. I mean, that's all letters that came in, the minutes, all of those kind of things. And that also we basically, as members of the commission, get a full copy of that, so we'll make sure. Because I was quite confused about why a number of things we didn't see them here. So I would like to make sure that full record of all those materials goes to the council and that we get a copy of that. And frankly, as soon as possible, so we can say, well, boy, somebody said this or sent this and I don't see it there. Yeah.
We have that motion. I believe, Tony, that would probably be standard practice, but I think I certainly support Mr. Clark's.
Yeah, that would not be too difficult. And we obviously have minutes, so we'll be able to provide the minutes from each of the last, five or six commission meetings, I think. All the correspondence from the taxing jurisdiction public, we can make that part of the record that goes to council.
Those are already included.
But we do
in
have,
minutes.
I'm sorry.
They're already included in the minutes.
We do have a motion,
Mr. Chairman,
that all of the records, all of the communications, all of our information be provided to the City Council. Do we have a second?
Second.
We have a second. Any further discussion on this one? I think this one is fine with the general vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. You know, this is going to be a fun one to ask for tonight. There's no next meeting date, so I know nobody wants to do this, but would somebody like
so
to
moved.
Make... We have it.
Sorry. Did you get back ask the question?
We have a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ernie? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.